Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues the industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
And we're back live from Oracle Open World. I'm Allison Klein, and we're on Chip Chat. And in the studio is Pauline Nist, one of our favorite Chip Chat guests, GM of Mission Critical Computing with Intel's Data Center Group. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
So, Pauline, I was really looking forward to this episode because I know that you have been working Oracle World to gather all of the interesting storylines and aspects of the news from the week. You know, we'll start with Larry Ellison's keynote. I think that, you know, in the break we were talking about that the Twitter traffic on Larry Ellison's keynote rivaled Amanda Knox getting out of jail yesterday.
Very, very close. It turns out that watching the Twitter traffic was almost more amusing than listening to Larry, and that's saying something. And I've talked to a couple other social media people here from other companies, and they were, you know, everybody was just jumping on. I think by far the biggest one was that Larry gave what, for all intents and purposes, was a hardware pitch, very focused on the Exa products and a little bit on the Spark T4, but very speeds and feeds and performance, exactly what you'd expect from a hardware vendor, which actually prompted one Twitterer to say, doesn't Larry know this is a software conference? and prompted some of my Oracle friends to say, well, you know, Larry's always been a closet hardware lover, and now that he's got his own hardware company, he just really couldn't resist. And he announced the Exalytics product, but he really left the big data appliance and some other things for other people to talk about later in the week. So it was, and he finished early, which was also highly unusual.
Wow, so a lot of surprises in that keynote.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows that a Larry Ellison keynote is going to be exciting. So he talked about the Exalytics products. We were talking about HANA a few weeks ago at the Intel Developer Forum, and we talked a little bit about in-memory databases. Here comes Oracle with a solution. So tell us about that.
Well, I think, quite frankly, this is Oracle really throwing down the gauntlet to SAP. They have taken the times 10 technology that they've acquired. They've put together another one of their Exa boxes that is totally optimized for Exalytics in memory. And the play that they're going to make is they're going to go out to the SAP base. Now, let's understand something. I would guess that somewhere between 70 and 80% of the SAP installations out there are running on top of Oracle. Mm-hmm. Because much to SAP's chagrin, for years and years and years, Oracle was the fastest database for running SAP. Standard ERP, SAP, SAP Financials, the whole nine yards. So the pitch Oracle's going to make is if you want in-memory analytics, you don't have to go to HANA. You can just clip them on the side of the Oracle database that you already know and love. And you know us, you trust us, we're going to make the two products integrate together. We'll even sell you an Exadata to upgrade your database if you want. We'll sell you an Exalytics to do in-memory analysis. Why do you want to take a flyer on moving over to SAP's new database? It's in memory now, and they are giving you like 4 years of promises for how they're going to extend it. But you don't need 4 years of promises with us. We've got everything today.
Sounds like it's an Exa everything world.
It certainly is. It is prompting some humor because there are some people out there on the floor calling them the Exlax products. But
everybody's got to poke fun.
Exalytics doesn't roll off your tongue when you first see it on a sheet of paper. Though I was intrigued that the big data appliance doesn't have an Exa name, and I don't really know why. Maybe they ran out of them.
Exa big, I'm not quite sure what they would call it.
Right. So, they've already done Exa data, so that's taken.
So what is the typical customer that's going to look at that Exalytics solution or the HANA alternative and say, this is something that I absolutely need in my environment?
We've been talking to a lot of the people who are looking at that, and I think that the real appeal is going to be to people who want real-time BI. And there are a couple of different environments in which that's really interesting. One of the things we're seeing is a lot more interest in production environments that have sensors on them and driving the sensor data right into the real-time memory analytics. And as we had one customer tell us, they'd like 40 nanosecond response time to make adjustments to production. And one of the more surprising ones, I don't know if I mentioned it to you last time, but we were talking to one of the energy guys who does drilling for oil, and they actually censor all of their drill bit equipment, because the goal is, how long can you leave the equipment down there producing oil before the bottom of the wellhead collapses, which can damage your equipment? And historically, while they've had some sensors and there are a lot of stuff they watch, they basically use guys who have a lot of experience. And one guy said to me, we've been playing around with this, and with sensor drilling, we can leave equipment in the ground 2 weeks longer. And the extra oil you get leaving the drill going for two more weeks will pay for any real-time computer system that you can buy to do that analytics. So that's, you know, that kind of production environment, whether it's chemical processing or, you know, anything that can lend itself to sensored operation with a real-time feedback loop is interesting. And I think not what we traditionally think of as analytics. We think more of the retail.
Right.
And there's certainly uses in retail, because now what people want to do is they want to talk to your cell phone while you're walking past Macy's in the mall, have it connect to your cell phone, learn about you, and if you're a woman, put up ads on a smart sign or give you a 15% off coupon for women's clothing right there on your cell phone to get you to walk into Macy's while you're standing in front of it. And I did work with Target years ago on BI, and Target actually wanted to connect with you while you were in the store and give you offers, because getting someone who is physically at your store to buy more is much easier than motivating them to get in their car and actually travel to you. You know, you can send them web stuff, you can send them phone stuff, but if you're sitting at home in your living room, you know, eating a pizza, having a beer, you know, going to the mall might not be high on your list, whereas if somebody gives you, you know, an extra 15 or 20% off, you're going to stop and look.
So once the free card is, the red card is in front of you, it's a free for all.
Yeah,
but getting you to walk in those doors is a much more daunting proposition.
Yep.
So when we talk about the device proliferation, and there's been a lot of numbers bantered about, 15 billion devices is probably the one that you hear the most in 2015. And, you know, maybe this is a good day to talk about this with the iPhone 5 introduction. Lots of people think it's phones and tablets, but it sounds like there's a lot of sensors and embedded communications equipment that is making up those numbers.
Well, you know, one of the joke of the embedded guys is that, you know, by 2015, if it has a coordinate plugs in, it's going to have a sensor of some sort of device, and sometimes maybe even a CPU in it, you know, doing things. And I think there are obvious ones, like you can start to see it now in some of the airports where they've got smart signs, and the advertising people have figured out that if there's one thing better than selling a sign once, it's selling it 20 times.
Right.
And having it, you know, go through a whole set of things for a program period of time. But what the you know, what the airport guys are doing is literally letting you touch signs and blow up sections if there's, you know, something up there that you know that you'd like to see more about, communicating with your cell phone. I think one of the other big areas that we talk about that is going to happen is putting the internet directly into automobiles. And, you know, automobiles today have got literally hundreds of little processors in them. I think they're moving to consolidate them now, just from a reliability point of view, into five or six. And you're going to have all of the usual ones that are managing the engine and your braking. And, you know, you don't want to ever interrupt those.
Sure.
But you're talking about backseat infotainment now, where it's not just canned movies, that you can stream stuff from Netflix in the back of the car, that, you know, you can watch Hulu for TV shows, you know, but you can sign up for Netflix TV, literally give everybody in the back of the car whatever entertainment that they want, or the ability to surf the web and shop or what have you. So I just see, I mean, you're seeing it on the phones now too, which is it's not just the kind of cute applications, it's putting eBay on the phone and let you bid from the phone and buy something. And I know, as someone who's been very aggravated whenever, and, you know, an auction was ending when I was not going to be home, you know, that's great to be able to do that. And take it with you literally whenever and wherever. Though I think the other thing that's going to come with it are a lot of privacy issues about who's collecting what data and who knows where I am and what I'm doing and what do I want to be visible? And
well, you know, when you were describing the retail environment, I thought about Minority Report and people cutting out their eyes so that they couldn't be scanned. So, you know, I think that there is some things that need to be worked out there. But when you think about all these sensors and you think about the introduction of Exalytics and HANA, it seems like, you know, we see target markets for it today, but that's only going to grow.
Oh, it is. And I think I actually talked to somebody in the social media space when I was down here at IDF, where what they want to do is they want to analyze Twitter streams and mm-hmm. see what hot, like if that had been analyzing Twitter streams and you did a, what's the little word thing that you get on the internet for all of the hot words, a Wordle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do the equivalent for tweets. Like, you know, at some point in time, is there some, like the day Michael Jackson died, that was all that was on Twitter.
Right.
You found out about it on Twitter, you know, before you found out it on the national news media. If there's a demonstration going on, if you know, something's emerging as an issue, that kind of analysis in real-time feeds like that is going to be really interesting.
So we need a twiddle.
Well, yeah, and the challenge is, I think, how you separate out the noise from some story that's emerging.
And how do you personalize that experience for what's noise or what's interesting to you?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a
exactly.
lot of applications here.
Exactly.
You know, you talked about the fact that Larry did not talk about the appliance, the big data appliance. Why don't you talk about that and tell me what you think about that and what this means from an Oracle customer perspective and what it means in terms of how we're approaching data management?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hype about Hadoop right now, and certainly a lot of it is very justified because Hadoop has given people a way to really go through this big unstructured data and do things. But what we're seeing with big data in a variety of spaces, both with the big data appliance that Oracle announced, but also some of the things that competitors like EMC with Greenplum is doing, is Hadoop is open source, and Hadoop is not just one integrated blob, it's a whole pile of different components. So you've seen like Greenplum pull in the MapReduce.
Mm-hmm.
What I haven't had a chance to really go through the white paper on big data, but it looks like they've really pulled in the key value store. And I think we're going to see more and more of that, which is that people are taking the goodness of Hadoop because it is open source. There's nothing to keep you from integrating it into your product and then adding a lot of value around it. And one of the things that Oracle made a point about, which I think is very valid, is what they've put into their big data appliance, in addition to the ability to analyze all of this data, is the ability to extract it with parallel loading. Because mm-hmm. their point is, okay, you get all this data, you kind of separate the noise from the stuff you want to keep, but then where do you put it? What do you want to do with it? Because Hadoop isn't an analysis engine. You would like to figure out how maybe you extract it from big data and load it into an Exalytics or
right.
somebody else's analysis engine. And they're actually providing those tools. And I think that that's what we're going to see continuing to evolve, which is a kind of end-to-end solution. Because as we always say, data for the sake of data isn't what's fascinating. You want to understand how to get those gems of information out, get them out faster, do real-time decision-making based on it, and really have the ability to react faster than your competitors. And so that means more than just kind of the first pass of analysis at it, but how you do things that relate to your business and get it integrated with the rest of your data.
So one question before the break, the other word in that sentence was appliance.
Mm-hmm.
They announced the big data appliance. They announced database appliance. Is this a trend? And do we think that appliances are extending the market for some of these solutions?
I think appliances are a trend to really take on ease of use and optimization. And the best product in the world is something that differentiates the supplier and adds value to the user. And I think that's what Oracle is trying to do. They're saying by putting this all together, giving you optimized hardware with a software stack that includes the OS, the virtualization, the database, the analytics, the end solutions like PeopleSoft, will give you maintenance on it. Like one of the things they're doing is they're supplying a lot of their own tools now free if you sign up for their maintenance contract. We're going to make it easy for you to patch. We're going to give you one of the advantages of our Enterprise Linux is it lets you do patching online. You don't ever have to go down, which to the customers is a real sigh of relief. I don't have to test out patches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry that I put a database patch in that doesn't work with one of the apps that's loaded on top of it. What it gives to Oracle is the ability to take a bunch of these pieces, many of which are industry standard, and add value by saying, we're going to improve the performance of the storage subsystem. We're going to parallelize everything. We're going to put really high bandwidth, low latency, InfiniBand in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all open things that everybody can get, but we're going to put them together in a way that's optimized. And I think, for instance, one of the intriguing things with their Spark cluster announcement was it actually has Exadata storage servers, which are Xeons in it, which is, I don't think, something everybody expected. So I found that a really interesting little twist, and we're off counting now about whether if you buy a Spark supercluster, do you get more Spark chips or more Xeon chips?
Well, that one will be a good topic to explore after the break. I want to take you down a path of some of the hardware trends that we're seeing under the covers of these platforms. For the listeners, please remember to send your questions to our Blog Talk Radio chat window, as well as at Intel Chip Chat on Twitter. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
We'll be right back with more of Allison's interview. Have a question? Visit us at twitter.com/IntelChipChat. We'll be answering questions live next.
And we're back from the break, live at Oracle Open World in San Francisco. I'm sitting here with Pauline Nist, and one thing that you guys don't know is the conversation never ends with Pauline, so we talked throughout the break, and we'll bring some of those topics to the end of the episode here. You know, you were talking about Hadoop, and you know, this was a topic that we chatted about at Intel Developer Forum too, and the open source focus on managing big data, the big trend, and everyone coming out with their version of a big data solution. But you know, the initial focus in this space was really driven by the internet guys and in web data management. When you move to an enterprise, they've got web data, they've got enterprise proprietary data, they may have other data that they're sharing with other folks, who knows what data they have. How do they look at all of these different solutions and come up with what you termed an end-to-end?
I think that you have, I think if you're a corporation and you're being audited and you have Sarbanes-Oxley compliance, you're forced to do some pretty serious thinking about your fiduciary responsibilities for data that's driving the profit and loss for your corporation, you know, about what's your what's confidential in terms of your uniqueness. And there are companies, particularly in the consumer industry, and not just retail, like hospitality, you know, somebody like Marriott, who we're sitting in. Marriott really considers its customer data and how it manages it and uses it to serve customers as part of its distinctive competence, that they know about you when you check in, they know what other properties you're at, they know what you like, they know how many times you've been there. They really can elevate your service level. I mean, it's just like the loyalty programs in the airlines. And they consider that part of their proprietary advantage. So they're very clear, but that's not going to be out in the cloud from anybody else. That is their, you know, the customer data is as important as their financial data. And even if you have a lot of web stuff, you find frequently that people that sell on the web also sell in bricks and mortar stores. Sure. You know, you take a Macy's or a somebody where you want to connect the web customer with the person in the store so that when you're servicing them, the checkout person knows that they're both a web shopper and a store shopper. And so that, I think, is causing people to give it a lot of forethought. I think it's a lot easier if you're totally web-based like Amazon. You know, your data is in the web. You have a little more freedom about where you do the analytics, about how you do cloud, about, you know, you don't have to ship it in and ship it out. I actually talked to a hospital that participates in a North American cloud cancer patient database for drug trials. And they ship a lot of cleansed information, no personal data. You're just assigned a number, but it's your genotype and your tumor type so that the drug companies can do searches if they're looking for patients for drug trials. Do you know how they move data to the cloud? The guy stood up at one of our boards of advisors meetings and said, if anybody tells you moving huge volumes of data to the cloud is free, they're crazy. We have found that the best way to input our data is to put it on hard drives, take them out, ship them FedEx to the cloud database. So this idea that you can take vast quantities of data, ship it to the cloud and bring it back, and that it's free and it doesn't take up bandwidth and time and money because you got to pay somebody for the bandwidth, really does make you think about where the data should live, and then, of course, what the security for the data is and what you want to do with it. And then you get into the, okay, what box do I want? What do I want for transaction processing where, you know, Oracle is really kind of said about Exadata. This is our bulletproof box. I mean, Larry must have used the fault tolerant word 12 times. Mm-hmm. Nothing breaks. No single point of failure. Patches online. Everything that people want for high availability versus something like a big data, you know, Hadoop style analytics box where, you know, people understand that it's not going to be perfect. But you
node
can,
redundancy. Exactly. And if one node fails, no big deal.
Right, exactly.
Totally different model.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at these highly reliable, highly performant systems that are doing this more mission critical analytics and in the in-memory databases, you said something interesting around the capabilities of this hardware and how it's designed from a solutions perspective to deliver the uptime and response time for this. But I want to take you back, because I know that you have a long history in this space. Why is 64-bit so relevant to the ability to deliver in-memory databases?
Well, it's actually interesting. I have to admit that I worked on Alpha, which was one of the early 64-bit systems. And when everybody did it, they thought that 64-bit everywhere was going to be wonderful, that all your buses, mm-hmm. everything. And certainly it gives you bandwidth. But the two things the customers valued most were the precision of the arithmetic in the floating point space and the memory addressability in the database space. So we actually worked many, many years ago, I hate to say how many, with Larry on doing an in-memory database analytics query database with him on alphas. And he did a product launch with us. And the first time he saw the numbers, he was blown away because mm-hmm. it really was what he said Sunday night. When you do in memory, it's not a 20 or 30 or 40% speed up. It's a 10 times, 20 times, 15 times speed up. And it's kind of hard to realize that. But once you totally get rid of the access time of going out to storage and through that whole software stack and everything's just in memory, it becomes really easy to do these very complex queries and not take any more time to bring this together. And, you know, we did it on Alpha and it was interesting. And there were certainly top tier people who were using it, primarily in retail and mm-hmm. in places like that. But what you have now, a couple of generations later, you know, is you've got these great 64-bit Xeon products, which are very fast, which mm-hmm. have many, many, many more cores. I mean, we had one very fast core. And analytics also parallelizes really well because since it's doing reads primarily, you don't have to lock portions of a database. You can kick these all off in parallel. So you take, you know, relatively low cost, very high performance, industry standard 64-bit parts. You look at what's happened with DRAMs, you know, where I now come home, you know, and hold in my hand, you know, DIMMs to update our PC that has more memory than the first mainframe I ever worked mm-hmm. on years ago. So you've now got a price point where this is much more broadly available to people. And indeed, you know, everybody's looking at doing scalable systems because you can do that very easily. You can put a couple of 2 sockets together, you can put a couple of 4 sockets together, put a couple of 8 sockets together, you can connect these exaboxes together with their InfiniBands. You have InfiniBand, which is an industry standard high bandwidth, low latency kind of interconnect for inside these boxes. So it's all gotten mm-hmm. much, much more available from a cost of a technology and multiple sourcing, kind of situation. And I think what you're seeing is this whole new wave of people discovering that the basic principles were very, very sound, but you can now deliver it to people who can write 5- and 6-digit checks as opposed to, you know, millions and millions of dollars to buy these systems.
So combining this, you know, you've just described an incredibly capable, low latency solution built on industry standard hardware and taking advantage of the benefits we've been building into IA to level the playing field against mm-hmm. Proprietary architectures. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about is the challenge of, you know, how do you know where your data should be? Are you going to have pods of analytics engines for a multinational corporation where they're moving insight instead of massive data in the case of the hospital? You know, how are you going to address the shifting bottlenecks in this new world where data sizes are moving up, faster speeds for local delivery of analysis and, you know, globalization of connection between sites in a corporation, or, you know, different corporations working together on something?
It's going to be interesting, because I think that we're starting to see some of the early indications today of the fact that I would expect some regulation to rule. In Europe today, you have some regs that describe what data you have to keep in country.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the Europeans have jumped into the whole privacy law thing much more stringently than here in America, where you know, you can control whether somebody's pulling GPS data off your cell phone or not. You can turn it off. You know, we're probably going to see some rebound effect there. And some of it's going to be driven by financial regs. Some of it's going to be driven by country regulations. Some of it's going to be driven by privacy. We're kind of in the wild, wild west right now. I mean, you know, if it's not audible data, if it's not financial data, or, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley kind of stuff, you can do a lot with it. And I also think that as the analytics capability matures, people will learn where they can add value more. You know, when you look at this big data stuff that's coming off of the web, I think we're in the infancy of how people are looking at it, what they can analyze. You know, there are still a lot of startups playing with video analytics, which I think is going to be bigger and bigger in the future. You know, different ways of capturing it. You know, and the speech is still out there as one of the great kind of you know, we'd all like to talk to our computers. We would never really ever want the keyboard if we could get away from it, but nobody's given us the right replacement for that yet. So there's lots of room for the technology to evolve. I think you'll see corporations be more conservative because they've obviously got, you know, for us, you know, kind of like our fab data and our our forecasting data and everything. We're never going to let that outside of our walls. I don't care how secure, you know, a cloud kind of environment is. We may have private clouds that are protected in our firewalls, whereas all of this web-generated phone, connected devices, intelligent devices stuff is really is going to be out there much, much more in the ether. And people, I think, are going to struggle initially at how you get a handle on it. How much of it is, what's the word right now, exhaust? You know, stuff you're going to throw away because in the end it isn't really meaningless in all of this stream of stuff you're getting. And what's the exhaust to real data ratio? And how do you sort through that? And I think we're just at the beginning of trying to understand that.
Well, it sounds like we're in for a wild ride. I guess you'll keep us posted on where we're going with the next visit on Chip Chat.
Yep, every 5 years, I think the next 5 years can't be more exciting than the last, and they really are. I mean, it's just an amazing time to be out there, you know, with the technology that's being delivered.
So what's on the docket for the rest of the week at Oracle World?
Well, obviously the big thing this afternoon is Kirk Skaugen is giving his Enterprise Solutions keynote pitch. He's going to be at the Novelis Theater at the Yerba Buena Center for the Art at 1:15 this afternoon, talking about a vision for the data center in 2015 and intelligent connected devices. And the real reason that I want to promo it is because it's not actually in Moscone. You have to exit the Moscone building and go over to Yerba Buena. It's very close. It's on the corner of Howard and Third. But I know how people are around here, which is they get underground at Moscone and just kind of wander around for days. And we want to make sure that a lot of people get over to hear Kirk, because I think he is going to talk a lot about these intelligent devices and the data that they're generating, and how, you know, the server demand that it creates, because, you know, every smartphone you plug in, every tablet you plug in is getting its information from a server somewhere. It's not just falling out of the sky. And so that's just rippling right through the system in terms of how you have to provide the data to service those devices.
Pauline, it's always a pleasure having you on the program. Hope you come back very soon.
Hope to see you again. It's always fun to do these on-site kind of things.
All right.